the host of the Anishinaabe episodes. We have a lot more to come. Until then, Nagaj, or later.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Minen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kakuuddao. We'll see you again.
This is Bird Note. It's a hot summer day in Minnesota, so you've thrown on a swimsuit, grabbed a towel, and packed a picnic for an afternoon at Lake Osakis. But wait a minute. Are those gulls? That black band around their sharp yellow beaks means these are ring-billed gulls sharing your afternoon on the water. You don't have to go to the ocean to see gulls. In fact, many oceanic species like grebes, loons, pelicans, and gulls migrate far inland during spring migration to raise their young near freshwater lakes. Like this bird. A forester's tern hovers with quick wing beats before diving headlong into the water to grab a silvery fish just below the surface. If you're in northern Canada, you may even catch a glimpse of a surf scoter. Maybe just a flash of the white patches on its face as it dives below the glassy surface of the lake. At the end of the breeding season, these sea ducks, like the other pelagic visitors, will make the long migration to the coast, where they'll spend the winter. Next summer, try letting the seabirds come to you. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
Support for Bird Note is provided by Sarah Murner and Craig McKibben from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
Thank you.
better. Cause you have my heart, till death do us part. I'm hoping that this will never end.
I'm invested in something that I'm not my fate.
Truth be told, I just want you closer again, again, again.
Mayor Ross Siemens has called for a meeting between the city, the Ministry of Housing, BC Housing, and the organizers of a protest homeless encampment set up at City Hall since June 29th. Brittany Maple is the program coordinator of Abbotsford Drug War Survivors and the executive director of the Matsqui Abbotsford Impact Society. I spoke with her on July 31st.
We just received a request this afternoon from the city for our availability. They're looking at arranging a meeting between us, BC Housing, the province, and the city. We are still awaiting the date and time for that, but we have suggested our availability next week, and we look forward to having the opportunity to discuss this proposal.
The proposal is what is outlined in the petition Abbotsford Council received for information on Tuesday this week, the last council meeting before it takes a summer break. The petition, signed by 98 people by July 22nd per the city's meeting agenda, called upon mayor and council to, quote, designate undeveloped municipal land to provide safe and legal camping spaces with appropriate facilities, unquote. Here's Mayor Siemens at the July 30th council meeting per the city's meeting archive.
I did meet with the Minister of Housing, and we will be sharing that petition with him and his staff.
I contacted Mayor Siemens for comment, and he elected to issue a statement via communication staff. Quoted in part, I requested a meeting take place between the city, ministry, and BC Housing to discuss next steps and start moving toward a resolution that includes meeting with the protest organizers to discuss their concerns directly. It is the responsibility of the province in addressing housing issues where there are gaps in types of social housing being made available, and by not having those gaps addressed, municipalities are bearing the brunt with little to no support. End of quote. I contacted the Ministry of Housing to ask for a comment, and Minister Ravi Kalon opted to issue a statement through communications staff as well, quoted in part, encampments are not a safe nor a dignified solution to the ongoing homelessness crisis, which reflects the significant demand for housing in Abbotsford and the need to stop the cycle of homelessness and prevent future encampments, end quote. Maple seizes on Kalon's use of the word dignity.
We have individuals who feel that they experience more dignity and autonomy and authority in their own lives when they're living in encampments than they do in the shelter and housing programs that are being provided.
As of publication, Abbotsford Drug War Survivors petition has grown to 148 supporters. While Abbotsford City staff estimate there are about 31 people camped out at City Hall, along with 38 tents, 2 canopy tents, and a trailer. For Civil Radio, I'm Mike McCullough. This story was brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. For this story and more, visit frequencynews.ca.
Hey, I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
Have you ever felt so sad that you don't know what's making you sad? have felt so alone because no one understands. They ask you, how are you? And you say, I'm tired. Because it'll be too much to explain that you're sad. No one understands. Even writing it down. Nothing seems to help. The dark days are just dark. We understand. Talk to me or any one of us at the Crisis Intervention and Suicide Prevention Center. Just dial 1-833-456-4566 or visit crisisservicescanada.ca.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate warms, extreme wildfires are becoming more common. But scientists are now using data gathered by NASA's Earth observation satellites to help keep people safe.
Earth observations are extremely valuable in detecting and observing and managing wildfires.
Michelle Hawkins works on climate resilience with NASA. Before a fire even sparks, satellites can pinpoint places with a lot of flammable material, like dry vegetation. Land managers can then use that data to plan prescribed burns that reduce the risk of a fire growing out of control. When a wildfire does occur, satellites can also help officials understand how big the blaze is and how it's spreading, so agencies can provide real-time safety alerts.
We have imagery and data and information that can show the fire perimeter so that emergency managers can provide updates to evacuation orders, for example.
And after a wildfire ends, satellites can spot places at a high risk for landslides, which can occur in recently burned areas. So even as the risk of wildfires increases on a warming planet, these eyes in the sky can provide the data officials need to keep people out of harm's way. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIBL 101.7 FM, broadcasting to the Fraser Valley from the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus on the traditional and unceded territory of the Stolo people. I have a great guest for you today, Dr. Afia of the University of the Fraser Valley, and we're going to be talking about the report that she commissioned for the City of Mission and the Lakwa Mel First Nation, and what the report says about the Fraser Valley and our future with climate change. Having been part of a comprehensive report on the various facets of climate change affecting the Lakwa First Nations, what findings did you find particularly surprising and unexpected during your research?
We have done this extreme heat mapping for the City of Mission, Lakwa Mel First Nations, and now we are in a process of doing it for the City of Abbotsford. So UBCM is the organization. We've been working on this grant, and there have been very, very interesting findings in our research because, again, it deals with extreme heat and how things have emerged over time and our society not being prepared for everything that was coming. So basically what we did in BC was a reactive approach to things. 2020, 2021 heat dome, all of that was basically an eye-opener for us that this is much needed and we cannot put these things on pending because the climate change is big and the changes that are coming in with the climate change are massive and unprecedented, and obviously it's kind of hard to tackle all of these problems with a reactive approach. So since then, 2021 onwards, municipalities, various NGOs, organizations have started working on this extreme heat preparedness in our society. The most exciting thing that we saw in our research is the reactive nature of the work that we are giving toward as a response to this issue. We've been very reactive. So the amount of damage that all of this has caused is huge, again, given the number of deaths after the heat dome and obviously this chain of wildfires, climate change, extreme heat, greenhouse gas emissions, warmer temperatures. All of this is kind of cyclic. It comes in every year, dry heat, wind blowing, hot, dry, windy weather, it's there and it would remain there. So these ongoing drought conditions that just don't happen in summers, but they are ongoing in the sense that over winter fires are also very common. So less precipitation, warmer winter temperatures, all of that causing lots of damage to our society. And in our research, we saw that our preparedness plan was very, very weak, and whatever was done was a reaction and not something that we had already sought out. So given this scenario, whatever we did through our research is preparedness of our community whenever such instances happen.
How did you decide which areas to include in the heat risk map?
These were the grants which were floated by UBCM. We were not the decider on these case study areas. These were grants floated by these municipalities. So basically, City of Mission reached out to us, and in the same manner, Lekamil First Nations reached out to us at Planning Geography and Environmental Studies, that these are some of the mapping skills that we would like UFV to invest in. So we basically did these studies on their request. We filled out a grant, and then using that grant money, some faculty members here within the department and some students worked together over mapping of these extreme heat conditions and also mapping the vulnerable population. So whoever is in danger, like seniors, people with pre-existing conditions, low-income people who do not have a plan in this kind of an extreme heat, all of this vulnerable population was mapped, and then a response plan was prepared for them.
Now, what are the main steps the community should take to stay safe during extreme heat events?
That's an excellent question, because this is the weakest link that we have in the whole process, that our community is not prepared. Given that In eastern parts of Canada, we anticipate a 200 to 300% increase of these incidences of wildfires, and within Western Canada, we anticipate a 50% increase. And these are the statistics that are given by the Canadian Forest Services. So, given that this is massive, the community has to be prepared for these upcoming disasters. So
the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
The famous beginning of the Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, BWV 565, as arranged by Alon Serio for the mandolin. I am Stephen Fan, and I am pleased to be here today with CJSF Radio to present to you one of the rising stars of the classical music world, Alon Serio. Along with a number of other outstanding musicians, Mr. Serio has been presenting as part of Early Music Vancouver's Bach Untamed Summer Festival. This festival includes a number of concerts, starting with Mr. Serio's free concert given at Granville Island. But it also includes music as diverse as Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610, as well as the upcoming Thursday concert at the Vancouver Playhouse by Mr. Serio, as well as the Pacific Bach Orchestra. Here, in his own words, is what all this is about.
All right, everyone. So we have this concert on August 8th, 7:30 at the Vancouver Playhouse. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have Neapolitan Concerti for the Mandolin, something you don't really get to hear that often. And I'm talking about composers like Giovanni Paisiello or Emanuele Barbella, great stars of their time. And they left us fantastic literature for the mandolin. With the orchestra, let's come, let's dance together. It will be a crazy concert. Join us there.
And now back to the music in the form of the Siciliano from the wonderful Partita No. 2, TWV 41, G2, arranged by Alon Serio and performed by him as well as the Concerto Foscari. This was originally written by Georg Philipp Talamon, one of the venerable greats of the Baroque tradition, but has been transformed in Mr. Serio's retelling. We asked Mr. Serio to explain to us what the mandolin means in pop cultural terms.
The mandolin, I would say, is the ukulele of the 18th century. That's what I can say.
He also gave us a little bit of an elaboration on what the mandolin is all about.
So the mandolin is a big family of instruments. And I don't mean only the different registers, like the we have the mandola, which is parallel to the viola, and the mandoloncello, which is parallel to the cello in the register. But I mean also the regional family, French mandolin. In North Italian, you know, we speak about the mandolino milanese, mandolino genovese, mandolino napolitano in the south, etc. So what you say is very correct when thinking about the North Italian mandolin. It did derive from the lute, and it actually, the tuning is almost identical. The mandolin is tuned in fourth, the lute has a third somewhere in between, and but they both had kind of six course or five courses, and from the instrument type, you could see kind of the ribs in the back are the same kind of type. So it was, you could say, a soprano lute. But in the south of Italy, you cannot say it. It's really a different family, different branch of the family. And it maybe came out of an instrument called the colaccione, which is a little bit like a bass guitar of the Baroque.
Mr. Serio also talked a little bit about what inspired one of the concertos that he commissioned.
He put a kind of Israeli folk song, which is based actually on a Basque folk song from Spain. We know it as Jerusalem of Gold. And it speaks about the city Jerusalem and over the 3,000 years of its existence, all the conflicts that it knew and so on, and still does, in fact. And it fits very nicely on this bass line of Bach. And towards the end, it all kind of dissolves into dissonances and splashes of clusters and things like that, in order to really kind of, it's a statement. I mean, it's a statement, this kind of city, this beautiful city that I had the pleasure of living there 5 years during my studies. And it's been in constant conflicts. I mean, for decades, centuries, and probably millennia. And that it kind of, you know, it seeks peace and it seeks redemption, and it had enough. That's kind of how I read the score.
We also talked a little bit about what made him respect so much Daniel Barenboim, the famous pianist and symphony conductor with whom he had worked at length.
But I think in his work, in his piano playing, in his conducting, there is a lot of analysis and almost mathematical characters, you know. He talked often about the graduality of crescendi, diminuendo in the orchestra.
Again, this is Early Music Vancouver's Bach Untamed Summer Music Festival, which is running from July 27th until August 8th, or this Thursday, where Mr. Serio will be playing with the Pacific Bach Orchestra a series of works from the Baroque period, including Bach, Vivaldi, Barbeia, and Wiener. He, along with the rest of the Early Music Vancouver crew, hopes to see you there. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. at the Vancouver Playhouse, and tickets are available from $28 upwards for those 35 and under. We leave you with this, the beautiful overture from the Telemann Suite, TWV 55 G2, arranged by Mr. Serio.